The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Sid and Siegel
Talk. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you feel that if you gave your life to Christ, it would make you some kind of right-wing conservative fuddy-duddy. Well, my friend, actually, I can understand how you feel. Honestly, I can. Those who have been following my radio show and my online columns found in places like Forbidden Table Talk or the San Diego Rostra are aware that for quite some time, I have identified myself as a liberal. Okay, stop clutching your chest, some of you. I see you out there. Okay. What I mean, of course, is that I am a liberal in the true, honest, historic sense of the word and in its generic usage. A liberal, one who marches to the beat of a different drum, one who does not always follow the pack, one who challenges a conventional wisdom most people accept without analysis, simply because it comes from respected institutions such as academia or the media. Unfortunately, and this is no secret, the definition of liberal has, of course, changed. And today, the term liberal is used to describe the status quo, the politically correct, and other so-called virtues offered up as sacred, ideologies taken for granted and portrayed as the only clear, sensible positions. Such people stifle debate. Such people resort to name-calling when they are challenged. What I'm saying, my friends, is that today, the word liberal no longer means liberal. And truth be told, today's liberals should call themselves conservatives. They never will. We won't live to see that day. But they ought to call themselves conservatives in as much as they cling to popular ideas, even if these ideas are only a few decades old. They're not challenging the status quo. Well, today, it is my pleasure to introduce another true liberal. He's a kindred spirit whom I had the pleasure of meeting in person last September, and he did more than write a column about true liberals. He had a much better idea than me. He wrote a whole book with one of the best titles I have ever seen. It's called Why I Am a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. The author is Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Everett holds a PhD from Michigan State University. He also has his own radio show in Oklahoma and is a writer for many publications, including The Examiner Enterprise, the late Chuck Colson's Breakpoint magazine, and Crosswalk.com. Everett Piper, welcome to our program.
Bob, delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hey, can I ask you about Chuck Colson for a moment or two, since that was sad news? I think it was just a week and a half ago or so. Did you see this coming as one of his friends, or was it a surprise to you too?
Well, I guess I saw it coming because of the Centurion's email communiques that were hitting the private internet communication network. Excuse me for fumbling and bumbling there for a second.
No problem.
But, he had been struggling with his health a little bit. We were aware of that, but he was, in many ways, he was the picture of health, both intellectually and physically. I think the brain hemorrhage took everybody off guard. Obviously, you know the story. He did recover a bit after the hemorrhage and was actually aware of himself and answering questions and giving the thumbs up for a couple days, but then in God's providence, it took a turn for the worst, and we've lost one of the great Christian leaders of our day. He was a wonderful man, a godly man, and one of the most insightful apologists that I think you and I have ever met.
I think so. And how well and how long did you know Mr. Colson?
I was a graduate of his Centurions program. I just mentioned that in my first couple of sentences of answering you. Centurions program is an idea that Chuck came up with some years ago where he would select 100 people, thus the word centurion, per year, and he would invite them to engage in an apologetics forum for a year. And I was fortunate enough to be one of those 100 people that joined in the Centurions in a given year, and was blessed to claim Chuck as a friend, and he was very generous and gracious to me. He actually endorsed the book that you just referred to, so there's a cover endorsement.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw his endorsement on there. Very impressive.
Chuck is just, I don't know, I suppose we could have a debate as to whether we have literal prophets of our day or whether the prophets of old are the end of that line of official prophets, but if you want to loosen the definition of a prophet a bit to one that is just a great leader and someone who speaks the truth boldly into our lives and into our culture, I would argue that Dr. Colson indeed was that for us.
Well, great of course, we often hear spin in the media that he became born again as a way of convenience since he'd been caught in the Watergate trials. But I've always understood, and I guess you could testify as one who knows him, that everybody around him would testify that his conversion and the change of his heart was absolutely 100% genuine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, come on. This man in the 1970s changed from a very hard, hard man who was Richard Nixon's hatchet man of sorts. If Nixon wanted something done, good, bad, or ugly, Chuck Colson would get it done. And by Colson's own admission, that often was not the highest of roads to take. But that was his call in life, and being a former Marine that was very aggressive, maximum type A, a man that would get things done, Chuck Colson was that. And God softened his heart in a miraculous way, and Colson's conversion was not just a foxhole conversion, if you will, that was superficial to save him from the consequences of being caught doing something illegal during the Watergate times. This was a true conversion, and especially for those on the left, the progressive left that fancy themselves as folks that believe in justice, social justice, and believe in helping the downtrodden, helping the poor, and helping the underprivileged in culture. Colson, as a conservative Christian, leads the pack. There is no one I'm aware of, left or right, progressive, liberal, conservative, who has done as much to reach down into the dregs of society, the lowest of the low, dirty his hands, and get on his knees to help people out of their situation. He did it for decades because he was a born-again Christian.
You know, it is interesting that people on the left will rush to the defense of some murderer on death row who hasn't repented. But boy, if somebody repents with Christianity, you don't see all the mercy and understanding and flexibility,
right,
do you?
No. But again, back to your initial question, was Colson's conversion obviously real? The proof's in the pudding. He practiced a godly life. He wrote, he spoke, he taught, he preached, he lived what he practiced what he preached. He lived his Christianity in a very bold and honorable way, and there's no chink in his armor.
Well, I'm grateful that he lived long enough to pass on the mantle to you too, sir, because you're in that fine tradition. And as I mentioned in my introduction, I absolutely love the title of your book. If you're just tuning in, I'm with Dr. Everett Piper, author of Why I Am a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. It's just a perfect book title. Did you have to fight with your publisher for that title? What kind of reaction did you get from your publisher? I'm also curious, what kind of reaction have you gotten from conservatives? And even more interesting, what kind of reaction have you gotten from liberals when they see a book with a title like that?
Well, in answer to your first question, my publisher actually liked the title and felt that it would be a very catchy way to engage people in the discussion of what it really means to be liberated and to enjoy liberty. And if you want to be free, if you want to experience justice, there has to be a measuring rod outside of those things being measured, to quote C.S. Lewis, or you can do no measuring. And therefore, the whole concept of liberal, liberty, liberation, all using the same root word, the whole concept assumes that there is a objective measurement of liberty and liberation, and if you want to enjoy those things, then you have to go back to God's standards in the pursuit of that liberty. Otherwise, you're going to be subjugated to the opinions, the power, the popularity of politics and people. That's the irony of our day. The progressive left experiences no liberty. They enjoy no liberation. Case in point, I have greater freedom to debate ideas at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, a conservative evangelical Christian college, than I would at my alma mater, Michigan State. I can debate sexual morality at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. I can debate global warming at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. There is no idea that is off the table because we believe that truth with a capital T will serve as the judge of the debate, not you and not me. In other words, my opinion doesn't matter. Your opinion doesn't matter. Truth matters. It's akin to playing a basketball game or a football game, or perhaps even playing a musical instrument. If there is no judge, objective standard of music, then you won't have a concerto, you'll have chaos. If there is no objective judge, a referee, if you will, to blow the whistle on the basketball game, you can't play a game. It's meaningless. There are no boundaries in which to play. The paradox of discipline and freedom, where there are fences, if you will, you can be free to play within the boundaries of that fence. Where there are no fences, G.K. Chesterton has a great quote on this, as a matter of fact, you actually fall off the edges of the cliff and you get killed. So freedom comes from the fences that God gives us in his objective, moral, natural law. And liberty and liberation come at the hand of that same law. There is no liberty without law.
Yeah, you know, I love Chesterton, and I love his other quote, when a man stops believing in God, he'll start believing in anything. Isn't that the direction our culture's headed for today?
Well, it's the summary of postmodernity. The arrogance of the postmodern mind. Again, the arrogance of the progressive left. And we're all tempted to it. It's easy for me to poke at the progressive left, but you and I and every one of our listeners has the same temptation. It's really the original sin. Isn't it curious that God tells Adam and Eve they can do anything in the Garden of Eden except eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Now, why is that bad? Why would eating of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil be bad? Wouldn't God want us to know what's good and evil? Well, I think the answer comes along when you listen to the words of Satan, because he tempts Eve by saying this, God knows that if you eat of that tree and you eat of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, that you will become as God. You will be God. You won't need him any longer to tell you what's right or wrong, good or evil. You can define it yourself. And that's the postmodern mind. In our arrogance, I've got a friend, Graham Walker, who used to work here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. He called it the pathology of the intellect, the sickness of the mind, the original temptation. M. Scott Peck, in one of his books, called it the diabolical human mind. Romans 1, 2, and 3 calls it the reprobate mind. We all know what's right and wrong. We know the truths of God, but we are given over to a reprobate mind because we've exchanged those truths of God for the lies of men.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what kind of reaction have you gotten when you've run into a liberal and they've seen the title of your book? Have they gotten defensive, like, oh, what a joke, a conservative guy taking on the mantle of liberal?
Well, you know, I haven't had any angry, red-faced, progressive naysayers. Now, I'm sure they're out there. They just don't care to engage, which, again...
that's the story of their life. They never care to engage.
Exactly.
They'll write some blog about you, but they're not going to really engage
you. There you go. They're the ones who claim to be the liberal in the debate, but yet they'll close down and use ad hominem attacks and non sequiturs to shut you and me down, thus not really wanting to engage in any dialogue, any debate, or any of the tolerance that they claim to celebrate. You and I have talked about this before when you were out here in Oklahoma. You watch these people say they can't tolerate your intolerance and they hate those hateful people and they're sure that nothing is sure and they know that nothing can be known and they're absolutely confident there are no absolutes.
I mean, absolutely. There's absolutely no absolutes.
You feel like you're watching a dog chase its tail. I mean, it's dizzying to listen to these people. They're not liberals. They're not classically liberal. They're the most foreclosed, closed-minded, arrogant bunch you and I will ever cross swords with. So it's easy to take their own language, if you will, the language of liberalism, and say, well, yeah, I do believe in liberty. I do believe in freedom, freedom of thought and freedom of expression and freedom to dissent from the consensus. I'm energized by a pursuit of truth. You know, wherever it leads, would you like to have a conversation with me? You know, Jesus himself said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So, Mr. Liberal, Mr. Progressive, would you like to have a conversation? I mean, you can go on and reclaim the high ground with the language that they've co-opted. I would say that we can do the same thing even with the word conservation. You know, again, the etymology of the word conservation is the same as that of conservative. I'm a conservationist. I want to conserve an owl, a tree, or a whale. Sure, I want to be a good steward of God's creation. So I'm a conservationist, but I believe in conserving something else, too. The time-tested truths of God. Those things are valuable and worthy of conservation. So I'm the true liberal because I believe in liberty and freedom, and I'm the true conservationist because I believe in conserving the highest of things, self-evident truth that's been endowed to us by our Creator.
It's amazing the virtues that the left likes to own, like they're the party of pro-choice. Well, I believe in pro-choice in the sense that I believe people ought to be able to choose what to eat, what to drink, whether or not to smoke, what kind of radio shows to listen to as opposed to the fairness doctrine, what kind of cars they ought to be able to drive. And it goes on and on and on. You listen to today's liberals about the only choice they think a person ought to have is the right of a mother to go ahead and have an abortion. And some of them are even embracing China, where it's against the law to have more than one kid. And if we ever had those kinds of laws over here, the whole term pro-choice would be thrown out of it anyway. Even that isn't pro-choice, it's pro-abortion.
And again, they've taken a word, and you and I are preaching to the choir right now, at least between the two of us. I don't know about your listeners, but I'd like to...
We have some listeners that disagree, so a little more than the choir out there.
Well, those that disagree out there, just consider this. The pro-choice agenda, and I used to be pro-choice, by the way. We can talk about that further if you want, but I'll just throw this out there. I used to be on the other side of the fence. I used to argue for a political candidate, my first job out of college, I was her campaign manager, that this particular candidate did not believe in abortion. She just didn't believe in legislating morality. She thought that morality needed to be pro-choice. Now, stop and think about what I used to say and what perhaps some of your listeners say today. They don't believe in legislating morality. All legislation assumes some moral standard. Whether it's a speed limit or a limit against murder, it assumes there's an immoral assumption that's endemic to that particular argument.
They always mean I don't believe in legislating the morality I don't like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my own journey from the pro-choice to the pro-life side basically was a recognition that I have no right to dumb down the definition of choice, because I wasn't arguing for pro-choice. I was arguing pro-abortion for this simple reason. What choice did the kid have, the young baby that was terminated? Zero choice. So I was arguing for the choice of the individual that I wanted to vote for my candidate, but I wasn't willing to argue for a legitimate choice of life for the individual that would not have the opportunity to vote.
Yeah, they use words like choice or women's rights when people are looking for a quick sound bite. And I guess today with Twitter and everything, I hate it, but we do have to say things in sound bites. People will ask me, what's your opinion of abortion? I'll just say very quickly, I believe in the rights of all women, including baby women. And mm-hmm. Then they kind of look at you like, whoa.
Yeah.
And I think conservatives need to stop letting the other side own all the good words and terms.
Well, and that's, I think, the point of the title of my book. I was trying to basically poke a stick in the eye of the progressive left and perhaps even challenge the conservative to realize that these words have meaning. Words have meaning. Words mean something. They always mean something. And who are we to take and twist and manipulate words so that they actually end up going the opposite direction and meaning the opposite thing as their original intent? You know, words like green mean something different today than they did perhaps a decade or so ago.
Yeah, it used to just mean you took blue and yellow Crayola crayons.
Exactly.
And made green on your paper. Today it means you're going to have all kinds of EPA regulations. That's what it means.
In the words we use to define sexuality today, gay. There was a time when gay meant something very different than it means today, but we've allowed the word to be co-opted into a political and sexual agenda that's antithetical to what the word really means. And likewise, liberal and conservative, segregation and integration.
I'm an integrationist.
I believe in integrating head and heart and fact and faith and belief and behavior. I don't believe in false dichotomies of private life and public life. I'm an integrationist.
Well,
in fact, segregationist.
And what the left has done is they've taken the word integration, which was once a good word, and they've turned it into a bad word that they call assimilation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do the same thing on the other side. They use the word multiculturalism, which is a good sounding word, but what multiculturalism means is segregation.
Well, and
it staggers the imagination.
And intolerance is a similar co-opted word and bastardized word in a sense, because now tolerance is the holy grail of all that's good in our postmodern culture. Well, shoot, if I can't do any better than tolerate you, that's not a very high compliment of my feelings toward you.
And nobody tolerates everything anyway. I say to people, so should we tolerate slavery? Should we tolerate racism? Should
exactly.
we tolerate murder, rape? They go, no. I say, okay, then that's a buzzword. It's a neutral word. The only relevant question is to take a subject or a topic or a moral pound for pound and inch for inch and ask, is this something that should or should not be tolerated, instead of just throwing out the word tolerance? And if I don't tolerate somebody on the left's view of same-sex marriage, they are incredibly intolerant of my position.
Right. Again, they can't tolerate your intolerance, and it's a self-refuting claim at every turn, which is postmodern epistemology at its worst.
Well, again, your book has just an absolutely brilliant title, but I like a lot of the writing inside. In the book, you write, I am a liberal because of my passion for a liberal arts education. An education that is driven by a hunger for answers rather than the protection of opinions. An education that is not subject to the ebb and flow of personal agendas or political fads. An education that is not afraid to put all ideas on the table because there is a confidence that in the end, we will embrace what is true and discard what is false. Dr. Piper, are people getting that kind of education from most universities today?
Absolutely not, and we all know that. Yeah, you're setting me up here to hit that softball right over.
Me? Throw softball pitches to my good friend Everett Piper? Never.
We all know that the educational establishment is morally and intellectually bankrupt today. And I'll pick on my own industry. I mean, the liberal arts academy was established in the medieval era to educate what? A free man, a free people. Thus the word liberal, liberate, liberation. Liberal arts education, the classical liberal arts education, was created for the very purpose of freeing humanity from the consequences of its own sin. Yours upon me, or mine upon you, or the consequences of our own personal sin upon ourselves. So the way for society to grow, to be enriched, to become better, to become pure, to become sinless, if you will, was through the education and the liberation of the mind, the body, and soul from the bad ideas and the bad consequences that were plaguing humanity at the time. Now, can any of us with a straight face say that that's what our universities are teaching today?
Absolutely not. Everett, it's fascinating having you. Hang on with me over the break. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Our honored guest, Dr. Everett Piper, author of the book, Why I Am a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My guest today is Dr. Everett Piper, author of their book, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, and president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Dr. Piper, welcome back to our program.
Great to be here again.
It's great having you. You know, you mentioned, you referred to Chuck Colson as a prophet. Well, a mutual friend of ours, Jim Garlow, the pastor of Skyline, he says regarding Everett Piper, he calls Everett Piper a prophet. I'd like to read what he writes. Everett Piper stands in a long line of prophets. Prophets are always heralded. That is the good news. The bad news is that such recognition usually comes long after these prophets are dead. During their lifetimes, they are regarded as reactionaries and accused of melodrama. Why is that? Because they see what is coming before others see it, and they warn others. Everett, what do you see coming for our country?
Well, I think we always have the opportunity to turn the corner for the good. So I don't want to say anything I say right now is not fatalistic. I believe that we are called upon to repent as individuals, and we can turn our lives around, and we can rest easy in the joy of salvation, the joy of repentance, and the joy of forgiveness with confidence in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I believe that. As a Christian, I believe that. As a scholar, I believe that. I think that's a provable historical fact that we can enjoy personal redemption and personal repentance and personal return to the right ways of God rather than continuing down our own ugly paths. So I believe that, and I believe that's true as a culture, too. We've seen reformations in our culture. We've seen awakenings within our culture, and I think we have the opportunity to experience those same things today. However, let me just say what the challenges clearly are. Clearly. I've used the word postmodern, and you have used that too, and not only today and other writings and other talks that you've given, but the postmodern epistemology, the way we know things today, and postmodern ontology, those things that we consider real today. Epistemology, how do you know? Ontology, what is real? Today, politically and academically, intellectually and spiritually, mankind, you and I, men and women alike, have elevated ourselves to the status of God to the point where our opinions rule the day. We can make it up as we go. We can make up morality as we go. We can make up the definition of what's living and what's dead as we go. We can make up definition of what's sexually moral and what's not as we go. And because we've elevated ourselves to the ultimate definers, if you will, the definers of everything that's good and everything that's evil, everything that's right and everything that's wrong, opinions now have taken the place of what used to be considered immutable, unchangeable, self-evident truth. And that's a very dangerous place to be. And I'll say this last thing, and then I'll take a breath here. Pol Pot had an opinion. Mao had an opinion. Robespierre in the French Revolution had opinions. Stalin had opinions. Castro and Chavez have opinions. Hitler had opinions. All the despots of history have had very strong opinions as to what was right and what was wrong. But the lessons of history teach us time and time again that opinions always enslave. They always lead to bondage. They always, always, always lead to brokenness. It's only the truth that shall set us free.
It's like the old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Absolutely. And you could change that word a bit and be saying the same thing. The road to hell is paved with good intentioned opinions. And, you know, I've told my students here at Oklahoma Wesleyan, and I'll get off this bandwagon after I make this last point. I've told them in a commencement address more than once here, congratulations, after 4 years of study, 4 years of tests, 4 years of quizzes, 4 years of the rigors of the academy, it's commencement day and you're going to graduate. And you know what, students? In a few minutes after I get done giving my boring commencement address to you, way too long, I should have known better, you're not here to listen to me talk, you're going to come up to the podium and I'm going to shake your hand as you walk across the stage and I'm going to whisper in your ear as I hand you a diploma, congratulations, you have a degree in opinions. And then I just let the absurdity if that sink in for a second or two while this audience looks at me thinking, what in the world is he talking about? And I say to them, I say this, that is a insult. That is ridiculous that I would suggest that all your education got you was an opinion. You came here to learn something. If you're a nurse, hopefully you know the truths of how to administer medication. If you don't, and you're doing it just on your opinion, stay away from her. You're dangerous. And if you're designing airplanes as an engineer on the basis of your opinion, please tell me which one it is. I don't want to get in it, nor will you, because the thing won't fly. Opinions are dangerous. Education isn't about crafting opinions.
Now, a lot of people, as they're looking toward the future of our country, as I know you've expressed a lot of concern in your book, they're viewing this election year, 2012, as very pivotal. Some people don't believe we can take another 4 years of this administration, at least not if he also controls the House and the Senate. And some think even if he doesn't control the House and the Senate, he seems to find ways to circumvent around them. President Obama in 2008 promised to fundamentally transform America. Can you share with our audience your opinion of this man and his presidency? And this is probably going to sound like another softball setup, so let me be add a little bluntness to go with my subtlety. Please don't feel you have to hold back and use just as many colorful metaphors as you want, short of FCC regulations.
Well, as a Christian college president, I won't embarrass you with any of my vocabulary or my language. I'll try not to. But I do have some strong views. And let me clarify this for those who may be listening that might be tempted to disagree with me. I am not going to attack President Obama as a person. I will attack his ideas. I'm not going to attack you as a person, but I will attack your ideas. I won't apologize for challenging the wrongness of the way you think, but I'm not going to venture into ad hominem attacks where I shoot the messenger.
Hey, Everett, if I allow you to attack me as a person, would you go ahead and attack him as a person too?
Oh, get thee behind me, Bob. Get thee behind me. Oh, but seriously, on President Obama, let's go back to his campaign slogan of 2008, hope and change.
Yeah, we got plenty of that. We did.
But it's the perfect slogan. It's the perfect campaign slogan. He's brilliant.
Because it meant nothing.
Absolutely.
It was meaningless.
It is a postmodern slogan to the max, because what he's doing is akin to taking an empty glass, and he's writing on the side of the glass, change. And then he's tempting you and all the other voters in America to pour into that glass whatever they want. It doesn't matter what they pour into it, because they're the ones who are defining what the glass holds. Same with hope. Change you can believe in. Hope and change. Change.gov. Change in our time. Change.com. Change, change, change. Hope and change. They're postmodern slogans that the voter, the electorate, could fill full of whatever subjective meaning they wanted to put in that glass. And that's very dangerous, because you have no idea what the values and what the virtues were and what the objective truths of Barack Obama really were.
Yeah, I remember in 2008, I talked to a college student after one of my talks, and he says, I loved everything you said except your comments about Obama. And he says, we've got to support the Obama. He didn't even say Obama. He said the Obama. It was almost as if he was saying the Messiah, but it was the Obama. And I said, well, why do you like Obama? And he lifted up. He gave me the high five with the thumb. He said, change. I said, change for what? He just kind of looked at me confused. He said, change for the better. And then he walked off, because he didn't know what. It was like playing a game of poker with somebody. And you asked to see their hand, and they were bluffing. They don't know what they're talking about. It's kind of scary. Okay, well, Everett, hold with me over another break. We'll be right back. Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, a very provocative book by Dr. Everett Piper, and he is also the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. We'll be right back. To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show. At a chapel service in 2005 at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, Dr. Everett Piper said, "Education matters. Our ideas will either lead us to the hellish existence of original sin where we suffer the consequences of our own arrogance, or they will lead us to a heavenly joy where justice and liberty flourish, where we enjoy the freedom of living within the boundaries of what is right and true, where we know because it is revealed to us by God, not because it is constructed by us and the serpent, and we seek to be God." Everett Piper, welcome back to our program.
Again, pleasure to be here, Bob.
And I hope you were just warming up about Obama, but please, pray tell. Tell us more.
Well, one of the things that I think we should expect in leadership is humility before something bigger than the leader. And in President Obama, I don't see that. And I would ask even those that have voted for him and intend to do so again, what authority is higher, better, more absolute, more permanent, more immutable than President Obama's opinion and word? What is it? Does somebody else have the right? Does something else have the right to define what change is and what hope is? Or is he the end of it? It seems to me that the president doesn't want to accommodate the Supreme Court's ruling or judgment or even the will of the people. It seems to me that he wants to, in a very progressive way, not a liberal way. Again, getting back to the classical definition of liberal, I do not see President Obama as a liberal. I see
a leftist, but not a liberal.
He is a progressive, left of center elitist. He believes in a very Gnostic way. He believes in a very Gnostic way that he has knowledge over and above what you and I have as to what's best for our culture, best for us, and best for us as people. He believes that he can define what sexual morality is and is not. He believes he can define what justice is and is not. He believes he can define who should be liberated and who should not be liberated. He believes that he can define all for those underneath his thumb. And I think that's a very frightening position to be in. If George Bush had the same positions and the same attitude, I would say the exact same thing. So if anybody wanted to call in and challenge me for being a closed-minded right-winger, please stop it. I am not. I have a lot of criticism to venture towards George W. Bush because I think some of his fiscal policies were insane.
Oh, yeah. I actually gave Bush quite a mixed review with a lot of things. Some of his hypocrisy with saying we won't make deals with nations that harbor terrorism and then forcing the Israelis to make deals with the Palestinians who wrote the book on terrorism, some of his stuff regarding our borders. Although, still, I have to say, I do believe he was light years better than Obama, if I had to compare the
two. Well, the bar isn't very high there.
I know. Yeah, Everett, when I visited your university in September and you were kind enough to show me around, we got to chat, you warned me ahead of time. You were the first person I heard it from, this whole idea of the government insisting that religious institutions provide contraceptives for its employees. You were concerned about how that would affect your Bible college. And so, obviously now, with the Catholic Church, this has broken all over the news, but you had your telescope out ahead of time.
Well, absolutely. And again, ideas have consequences. I mean, Barack Obama said in his 2008 campaign at the Saddleback Forum, okay, he said at the Saddleback Forum, that he believed that religious institutions did not have the right to discriminate at all if they were receiving any source of federal recognition or funding. Okay, now Oklahoma Wesleyan doesn't receive direct federal funding. I wouldn't accept it if they offered it.
But because of the new Obamacare, they would have to start accepting it, right? The whole puzzle here.
The puzzle, it gets so complicated because of Obamacare and the Health and Human Services mandate through Kathleen Sebelius. By the way, sidebar, Oklahoma Wesleyan University is filing a lawsuit against the Obama administration and HHS. And
really? Wow.
Yes, we are currently working with the Beckett Fund and the Alliance Defense Fund, and we are filing a lawsuit because we're saying no. We cannot capitulate. We cannot accommodate that demand, because what they're asking us to do is to violate our religious convictions. See, sexual behavior is always, 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 in the history of Western civilization, has always been a moral discussion. Sexual behavior is a moral discussion, and even if the progressive left wants to disagree with me, I would ask you this. Do you believe that rape is wrong? Do you believe that incest is wrong? Do you believe that having sex with animals is wrong? And even most of the left would agree those things are wrong. Then I would say, well, then we agree that sexual behavior is a moral discussion. Now we just have to decide who's going to draw the line and where and who has that authority. Is it God or is it you? Okay, so we're really not that far apart when it comes to a discussion of sex. We all believe that it's a moral discussion. We just want to draw the lines differently, or we want to wrest authority from God and claim it for ourselves because we want to do something that we like. Okay, now I know the left and those that are pro-gay and lesbian are going to have a fit over me equating homosexuality with bestiality, but I would ask this, what's the difference? If it all is consensual, if consent is the only line of morality when it comes to sexual behavior, then why isn't sex with anything or anyone okay as long as there's consent involved?
Well, in fact, you know, they don't like hearing the analogies with bestiality or even with pedophilia, but it's already starting to happen. You know, one of the big sacred cows with the whole homosexual issue is that in 1973, the APA declassified homosexuality as an emotional disorder. But then in their DSM-4, many years later, they went ahead and they declassified pedophilia as an emotional disorder too. They started getting some bad press, so they put out these statements a politician could have written saying, well, we want to make it clear we think pedophilia is still wrong and immoral and horrible, but we just can't technically call it an emotional disorder. Okay, well, that's where it begins. But that was good enough for NAMBLA to start marching in gay pride parades. So, I mean, what's going to happen 50 years from now? If somebody objects to sex between a child and an adult, are they going to be called a pedophile-ophobe?
Well,
I mean, somewhere we've got to draw a line.
They have to be. And in fact, the line has already been crossed. You suggested that, and the proof is in the Canadian Parliament right now, where it was being argued this past fall that pedophilia be legitimized. There was an argument in the Canadian Parliament, and they brought in university faculty members to testify that pedophilia between consenting individuals is fine. So age is no longer an issue as long as there's consent.
Oh, that's great. Oh, well, the child consented. Yeah. Oh, that's great logic.
The 12-year-old, the 10-year-old, yeah. Whatever age, yeah. A young boy wants to consent to having sex with a 25-year-old. And I mean, I hate to be crass here, but knowing the male libido, and anybody who's listening would have to, Christian or non-Christian, would agree with this, the male libido is strong at probably 10 or 12 years of age in our culture today. What 10 or 12-year-old boy isn't going to want to have sex with a 21-year-old co-ed? I mean, come on. Sure, he's going to consent to that unless he's got some sort of religious conviction that restrains him and causes him to act in a more moral fashion. So if age is no longer an issue of consent, then pedophilia has to be okay. And that's being argued in Canada as well as in the Swiss Parliament.
Or even if the temptation wasn't there, little kids, they in their minds, adults can do no wrong. It's black and white. So if an adult's telling them it's okay, even if some little thing's going on in their system and sensory equipment saying it isn't okay, they're thinking, but the adult says it is okay. So it kind of throws their world into a tizzy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. My guest is Everett Piper, author of the book, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. And you are listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Everett, hold with me for one more break.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, SIEGEL, BobSiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.BobSiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. Dr. Everett Piper, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We're down to our last segment, and we'll probably be right in the middle of something feisty when it's time to suddenly sign off. So what I'm going to do is, ahead of time, thank you now while I have the time so much for coming on the show. It was very stimulating. It's a great honor to have you. You're one of the great thinkers of our time, and I hope we can make this a regular thing. I hope you'll come on our show again.
Well, I'm honored, and again, thank you for having me.
Okay, so we were talking about, the whole same-sex marriage issue, and I know that you went there just as an example, but the idea is that if we don't draw the line with one thing, then it gets to other things.
Right.
For example, the APA has technically, even though they don't like to brag about it, they've technically declassified pedophilia also.
Right, and the reason I went there is I was trying to answer your question on the Health and Human Services mandate. It's a mandate that has nothing to do with Catholicism. It has nothing to do, quite frankly, with health care. It has everything to do with religious freedom. Because, again, I was using the example and making the point that sexual behavior has always been a religious discussion, a moral discussion. Whether you're Mormon, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Methodist, okay, you believe that sexual behavior is a moral discussion, okay, because you believe that those behavioral standards are dictated by God and not constructed by mankind. With that as a given, what right does the government have to come in and tell you or me or a Mormon or a Muslim or a Methodist that we must comply with the government's definition of moral behavior and subsidize it with our dollars by buying a product that is a direct consequence of violating that behavior, i.e. an abortifacient? I do not believe it's right to kill human beings. An abortifacient, by definition, is a pharmaceutical abortion. It kills a human being. Why should I have to pay for that as a Christian or as a Christian college? I do not believe that my students should be engaged in premarital sex. They sign an honor code that says they won't. Why should I have to buy them condoms or other forms of contraception when they themselves have said they will engage in no behavior that would require those things? It seems antithetical. It would be akin to me having a rule against alcohol consumption, which I do, but then going and giving them coupons to buy beer. It's nonsense. It makes no sense. Or let me use an example that the progressive left actually likes. They don't like smoking any longer. You shouldn't smoke any form of tobacco.
It's unhealthy. Can't even show a picture of Winston Churchill or Franklin Roosevelt with a cigarette in their mouth.
It's a bad thing. It's the sin that the left seems to want to agree is, you know, with conservatives. Don't damage your body or someone else's with first-hand or second-hand smoke. Well, I have that policy that my kids can't smoke. Is the government going to turn around and require me to give them coupons for cigars?
Yeah, and it's such hypocrisy anyway, because this is the party that's always telling us that our body is our own choice, and yet they don't want you to smoke, but if you want to kill an unborn baby in your body, that's okay. There's just zero consistency here.
But my religious freedom is in jeopardy, and this is what your listeners need to understand. As a Christian organization, I'm being told, excuse my French here, but screw you. Okay? Screw you. We don't care what your religious convictions are, Oklahoma Wesleyan University or Everett Piper. You must pay for products that encourage or aid and abet in immoral sexual behavior. And I'm saying, no, I won't do that.
Well, I appreciate the stand you're taking. It shows a lot of courage. I thought with your French, since you were the president of a Christian college, you were going to say, excuse my French, but be fruitful and multiply you. That might have been a – there's a way you could say it next time. But
okay, maybe that's better.
You know, it's so funny, that Dr. Piper. That, we're always hearing these lectures about separation between church and state if somebody wants to put up a cross on an Army Memorial, though those words aren't even found in the Constitution, but so be it. Everyone talks about separation between church and state. Isn't it interesting how that separation never seems to work the other way? When the state wants to infringe on the church, there is no separation between church and state. But somebody accidentally says, God bless you, when somebody sneezes, oh my gosh, the Gestapo's going to be here tomorrow.
Well, and people better realize that this isn't just an Oklahoma Wesleyan debate where I'm filing a lawsuit because I don't want to buy contraception, pay for, I won't buy them, but they're saying now I have to buy health insurance that pays for these contraceptives or these abortifacients, and I'm saying no. Well, that's just a private Christian college in Oklahoma. That won't affect me. Baloney. It will affect you because your own church will be forced to do the same if it has a group health care package for its employees. See, this is how bad it's getting. These are the bad ideas that the Obama administration has brought to the table. They may be nice people. They may be well-intentioned people. I don't know. I can't read their minds, and I don't know their hearts. But what I do know is that the consequences of their ideas are incredibly dangerous and damaging to freedom of religion and the freedom of the individual to live a life as he sees fit.
And yet one thing we can be grateful for is that this particular issue has at least finally made the news. It was on your radar ahead of time, to your credit. But there are other issues just as ominous, if not more, that we're not hearing talked about as much. Can you address hate crime legislation and the thin wall between that and what will eventually become hate speech legislation, such as they already have in Canada?
You're getting into the issue, can I express disagreement with you or one of your listeners? And does that disagreement constitute hate? And who's going to redefine hate so that it is something that can be legislated and determined by the government? It gets back to sexual politics again. Can I, as a Christian, speak out and say that I love the individual, and again, the left, the gay and lesbian rights crowd hates this analogy, but it is logically sound. I can love you but disagree with your behavior. And I can say that your behavior is something that I have the right to judge. Your temptations, your proclivities, I will not judge. But once you act upon them and force me to bless those behaviors with my agreement, that is intruding on my rights and my freedom of conscience, and I cannot do that. You know, one of the things I hear all the time from the left is, well, stay out of our bedroom. The right wants to get into our bedroom and tell us what to do in the privacy of our bedroom. And to that I simply say this, close the door. Close the bedroom door and I wouldn't be there. Stop opening your door up and making your bedroom behavior public, and for land's sake, stop forcing me to stand in the door and applaud it.
Well, and it's
not the door.
It's not like they aren't commenting on the lifestyle of Christians or sharing their opinions of our behavior. Mm. And sometimes Christian behavior has a lot to answer for, but I wouldn't deny their constitutional right to critique us. It should work both ways.
Absolutely. And I don't consider it hateful if they come out and say, well, that Christian was a hypocrite because he did X, Y, or Z. That's not hateful. It may be a fact. And we should be embarrassed by that. Likewise, why is it hateful for me to point out that over 25% of those individuals that engage in a given type of sexual behavior are going to contract a deadly disease? If 25% of the people that drove Honda Accords were going to contract death or disease as a result of driving Honda Accords, you can bet your bottom dollar the progressive left would be looking to shut Honda down. But you have the same percentage of people that are suffering negative consequences from another behavioral choice, and we are being forced as conservatives to celebrate it. And if we dare speak out as the Ralph Naders of the world and say, that behavior can actually kill you, we're being told we're hateful. It's absurd.
It's Orwellian. It's absolutely absurd. And a lot of people are unaware, but in the 80s, there was a book that came out called After the Ball, which was kind of a manifesto, like another version of the Humanist Manifesto, but it was the liberal gay manifesto, and it laid out this ideology and this platform and strategy to brainwash America. And one of the things they said was demonize your opponents. Even if you meet somebody who you know loves the sinner and only hates the sin, portray them as a hate monger anyway. And it looks like they've completely succeeded.
To great measure, they have.
Well, Everett, the time went by far too quickly, but it was great having you. Can I just ask you quickly, you may not want to make a prediction. Do you believe Obama's going to get reelected, or do you believe he'll be defeated in 2012?
I pray, and we need to work hard. Every conservative, whether you like Romney or not, needs to recognize what the options and what the alternative is. And if we work together, we can win, but it's going to be very, very close.
Yeah.
I'm not making any predictions.
I can't predict either. I'm inclined to think there's a good chance he could get elected again, but I hope that I'm wrong. And we'll find out. We'll have you on again soon. Dr. Everett Piper, author of the book, Why I Am a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas. I assume people can go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, find your book.
That is correct.
Okay, my friend, great talking to you, and we'll talk to you again really soon.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, we'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.